31 days from now, we'll be watching a solar eclipse.
Nice. Yeah, wow. I forgot
that. We'll kiss under the solar eclipse, because that's what you do, right?
Perfect. No, yeah, that's totally what you do.
Welcome once again to Chill Filter, the podcast where we drink whiskey so you don't have to. But you probably should, and you probably are. That's why we like you. This week, we're drinking a very special newer release that's going to be Old Forester 1924, one of their new whiskey row series. But before I get into any of the whiskey, before I get into any talk at all, let's talk about some business. Hit us up on YouTube. YouTube, we've had a lot of cool hits this week, but we want you to like and subscribe. That's all I'm going to ask this week. Like and subscribe if you haven't already. It means a lot to us. We're growing. We're not huge. We're medium at best, and we want to get bigger, but not by like fake advertising or not by like buying followers. We're having fun, and we want you to have fun with us. That's the business. Here is the podcast. So, Brian, what's new? What's going on?
Yeah, I got a big new one for you here. So, note to all middle-aged people, even beginning to encroach on middle-aged people, checked out by a dermatologist. Go to your dermatologist, schedule an appointment for an annual checkup, have them check it out, because they found some, not melanoma, not cancerous, but they biopsied a couple moles on me, and they were like mild to medium likelihood to become cancerous.
Oh wow.
Okay. So they went ahead and scooped them out today. So
was that painful?
No, actually, like totally numb, no big deal. Nice. I was sitting there awake the whole time, and they were cutting out little dime shaped holes in my leg.
Dang.
And so PSA, it is very important. Yeah. You do not want skin cancer. Go do that.
My mom had one of those kind of things where they had to remove it. And my brother-in-law had something like that too. So maybe I should do that. I'd like to stay out of the sun.
Right.
But, you know, it's probably good to check it out too.
Yeah. And I mean, even if you've stayed out of the sun, genetics has a lot to do with it too and everything.
Yeah.
You never really know. I mean, somebody could hardly be out in the sun at all, and they'd still end up with a worse case than somebody who was, you know, out in the sun every day working an outdoor job or something. So
totally.
So yes.
That's a good point.
Highly recommend.
Get your body checked. That's good to know.
Yeah. Other than that though,
glad you're good for the record.
I was working on my taxes.
Uh-huh.
Finally. And this episode is not brought to you by H&R Block, because they've been kind of frustrating me. I don't know why. Oh, really? I started using them, but I've been using them for 15 years, probably.
You use them in person? Like you go there?
No, no. No, always software, always doing it myself. Mm-hmm. This year, so we got a Tesla this year. So I was trying to reap the benefit of that tax credit. And it took them until literally today to update the software to finally get it to calculate right with the credit. Right?
Wow, that's late for how big a tax discount thing that would be for a lot of people.
It was like pushing out. And it was like, oh, next Friday we'll have it. Next Friday, the form
better have
finalized.
It by April.
Yeah, I know, right? So finally today it was calculating correctly. So I went ahead and finished everything else and submitted it. And and for the first time ever, I got an email back saying the IRS rejected your return. And I was like, oh, nice. Dang, okay, wow, what did I do? What did I do wrong? And I went in
like
there. And it's
very soon after you submitted it?
Usually like within a couple minutes. As soon as they submit your return.
Yeah.
There's an auto checker thing.
Yeah.
That just like any glaring errors, they'll just toss it right back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's never gotten rejected before. So I got in there.
Especially with a software that should be able to check for that kind of thing.
Well, funny that you say that. Uh-huh. I went in there to see what I did wrong. And it was like, we're sorry, the IRS rejected your return because there's an issue with our e-filing process right now. So like they can't even file for me right now until they fix it next Friday when the next patch comes out.
Wow.
So I might jump ship next year. I don't know.
TurboTax, baby. I used to do TurboTax before I did. Heather and I get an accountant now. These, and it's not even that expensive. I think we pay like $150 or something.
Nice.
For like,
to not even have to worry about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. We just hand her documents and answer questions and she does the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's good. Nice.
It's what funny. About you though?
Yeah, things are good. We haven't even started. Normally we're like on top of taxes, but with two kids, we are running behind on taxes. And we're hoping we'll, you know, we've been last year we paid, I want to say like $2,000 more than like on top of, you know, the or whatever you call it.
You withheld extra
withholdings. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, but this year we like withheld more,
yeah,
or whatever it is. And,
yeah, yeah.
And so we're hoping that that'll be a little closer to like breaking even. My dad is funny. My dad's like a very money, but also tax law savvy kind of guy.
Yeah.
And, my dad is very much like, why would you look forward to like a, tax refund? Like, why would you like put more money so that the government can make a zero interest or loan? You're exactly. giving the government a zero interest loan on yeah. the on the tax refund. And yeah. I'm like, that makes sense. So I always try to aim for like not paying at all, yeah. or but also not, you know, getting a refund at all.
Yeah.
Because I just and it's not like I like hate, you know, like taxes or anything, but it's just like it's true. It's like that's a zero interest loan that you're handing to the government.
Right. So. That, yeah, I know people have strong opinions about this. And that's absolutely the argument. And it is 100% correct. Mm-hmm. I just don't subscribe to that.
It's kind of fun to get a refund sometimes.
It's like, it's forced savings. I mean, yeah, exactly. Sam and I, gladly withhold a little extra more uh-huh. for like a little random rebate yeah. check in the mail.
And you get to, yeah, do something with it.
Yeah, right. And you know, to an extent, obviously. Totally. But yeah.
Yeah. And so we who knows? I mean, we got another kid, so that throws in some adjustments. And then we yeah. got a it was like I want to say it was like $300 like a coupon basically. They're like, we overcharged you by $300 last year. We're gonna remove it from your or we're gonna add it to your potential refund this year or whatever the balance would be.
And that was from TurboTax?
No, the account? From the IRS.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they like found out we did too much or something. And who knows? I mean, I'm impressed that they would do that because I'm like, yeah. wouldn't you want to just rather keep the money and be that?
I know. Entity? They could have just said nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, things are good. I grabbed some Crown Blackberry yesterday.
Did you try it?
And it is, I did. And it is, it's not bad. It's just like, if it were a liqueur, it'd be great. But it's like half whiskey, half light okay. blackberry. And it's a light thing to begin with. Like, I wish it just were like a punch of blackberry yeah. as opposed to blackberry flavor inside of a Canadian whiskey, which is, you know, and it's 35 proof or 35%. So it's not really a whiskey. Yeah. But it's light in flavor outside of the blackberry. But I wish it were just like blackberry. If it's just gonna, right? like it's weird. It's like
blackberry it's, puree mixed with whiskey.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever had what is it? There's like elderberry, not elderberry. There's like blackberry liqueurs, like something yeah. like Chambord for blackberry. Like that's what I would yeah. want at this point.
There's a brand I'm very familiar with that has all sorts of interesting flavors. It's like an old timey French chateau art looking bottle.
Is it Chambord?
No, because Chambord okay. is a specific liqueur, right? Raspberry. Yes.
Yeah, it's like raspberry. I think. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'll think of it here in a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Hit me up. But yeah. Things are good. I'm excited. I finally made it official that I am driving down to San Antonio.
Hey, cool.
So I'll see you in a month from today. Yeah, we'll awesome. Watch today, a month from like 31 days from now, we'll be watching a solar eclipse together. So
nice. Yeah. Wow. I forgot.
And we'll kiss up under that. The solar eclipse because that's what you do, right?
Perfect. No, yeah. Yeah. That's totally what you do.
Sam's over there like, what are they doing?
Don't worry. She can't hear. It's just you and me here. Cool.
No. I'm saying during the solar eclipse. Oh. It's dark. You can't see it, Sam.
I'm like, baby, I got headphones in.
That's so funny.
I'll make a group chat with Mike and, yeah, and you good. and so we can chat about, you know, what we're going to do in San Antonio.
Yeah. And let them know, like was described already. This is probably said to be off the mic, but I'm cool with a couch.
Yeah. So, nice. Yeah. Cool.
But I'm excited. I love San Antonio. Lived there for 6 months one time. And hoping to see a friend or two while I'm there too on Sunday. Nice. So
you only lived there 6 months? You moved there and lived there for 6 months and then moved away?
Moved back. Yep. It was good. So that's the thing. I loved San Antonio, but I kind of realized I was going to school there for a little bit and I was like, you know what? I'd rather go to school where I started at James Madison. So that was kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of missed some of the friends I had in Virginia, even though I had good friends in San Antonio. It wasn't like, I think the thing was I had a lot of friends in San Antonio, but I didn't have any like really tight dudes that I could just like, you know, kiss under the solar eclipse. So
yeah, right. Yeah. It takes a real tight dude to do that with. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The tightest of dudes. So anyway, excited for that.
Shopping much at all? Have you picked up anything good recently?
No. Well, besides the BlackBerry. So one of the nice things about Virginia and the store near me is they have a lot of Jack Daniel's single barrel proof ryes.
Nice.
So I almost picked up another the other day.
a seventh one?
That would be like a ninth. So I'm like, I don't need it. But it is cool that they're all different proofs and they're all going to be different. But as well, the funny reason I bring that up actually is that I got to the store and they were unpacking all the boxes. And one of the boxes was a single barrel proof rye from Jack Daniel's box. And I was like, can I have that? Because I want to put the ones I have in a case and just have the label on the outside so people don't guess what it is.
Nice.
So
so they let you have it. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, oh yeah, they're cool about that. And they love me. They like they see a lot of these like, you know, bourbon guys that are just jerks and don't really like give them any credit.
Right.
But I'm just like, hey, you know, I'm here seeing if you guys got anything. We'll talk in the meantime. And
nice.
So it's good.
Yeah, can't remember if I told you I was trying to be good the other day, ended up deciding not to be good.
That's right. You did tell me.
Did I tell you?
Wait, did you get a stag?
So David, or somebody, I don't remember, gives me the heads up. And because I knew that there were going to be stags. Like I didn't know, but I
was
pretty sure. It was the right day of the week. Tucson had gotten them the day before. And so usually like in the same weeks, like Phoenix and Tucson kind of all distribute the same things.
Totally.
Whoever the distributor is, I'm blanking right now, but anyway, so it was a Wednesday morning and I was like, it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen, but I was like, nope, I'm going to be good. I'm going into work, doing the normal thing. Yeah. And then, so like around lunchtime, David texts me and he's like, hey, so the Queen Creek truck was late, but they're there now. And they're about to, oh no, it was my buddy Sean. That's who it was. Okay. So got to give credit where credit's due here.
Yeah.
So he's like, Queen Creek's unloading right now. You got to get here. So I was like, it's lunchtime. Okay. I'll jet out during lunchtime.
Yeah.
So I fly out there to Queen Creek and sure enough, they had gotten like three or four cases.
Nice.
Like largest stag drop I've seen, maybe even ever.
Actually. Was it a 24A or something like that?
Oh, it was so strangely enough, it was a batch 18. It was the last batch before they started putting like 22A, before they started putting a number on
You're a 17 guy. I think I have an 18. Thanks.
So I was a 17 guy until 22A came out, and I'm a 22A guy. Nice. But 17 is still fantastic though. But so anyway, we're there and David's there too. We're kind of all there at the same time. And David and I were like, hey, I mean, we're here. Why don't we just go up to Gilbert real quick and just see what's going on up there?
No. Because
Gilbert was where like there were a bunch of people this morning. All the stags went out. They were all gone. They were gone, you know, in the first 10 minutes or whatever.
And Gilbert's on your way home.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Well, not from Queen Creek, but
okay.
Anyway, so we go over there just for fun and just to see what's going on. And I'm chatting with the guys there. They're like, oh yeah, they all sold out right away. Of course. Blah, blah, blah. Oh yeah. Like literally the first words out of their mouth are, where were you this morning? when they see funny. Me come in the door. So anyway, so I am like kind of cruising up and down the aisles and suddenly David and I are like, yeah, but what if somebody like hid one in the aisles?
Cause I've thought about that so many times.
People do that.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh yeah, that's so funny. I should like peep behind some bottles.
Yeah.
So I literally cross the aisle onto the Scotch side and I look at one rack in front of me and I step over to the next one and then boom, right behind these two Grangestone tubes, the Grangestone Scotch tubes, I see this like top snout of the top of a stag bottle with the antlers. And I was like, I literally
so
like
why would they hide it up.
I picked it up and I was like, David, look at this.
Oh, that's amazing.
So why would they hide it? So I'll tell you who hid it, presumably. Uh-huh. Some guy who wanted to get two from the same store bought one or like stashed one in the aisle and then went out through the checkout line with his other one.
Don't they put it on the front counter though?
So lately it's been a little half and half.
Oh gosh. Yeah, I would have done that. Yeah.
Even when they do put it on the front counter, sometimes, you know, there's not an employee up there at the front counter.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, somebody could grab a second one if they wanted to when nobody's looking or whatever. But I actually heard that they were putting some on the shelf today to try to like, you know, throw people off. Like only people who are gonna see this are people who actually want it and not just people who are trained to look at the customer service counter when they walk in, you know. That's so anyway, like,
I remember one time I got a Michter's 10 rye that way. Yeah, I was like,
oh, you said it was in the glass case, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I assume
that's crazy. Two stags. Was it the same batch 18?
No, actually. So the other one in Gilbert was from was 23B. Yeah,
nice. 23B.
Yeah. Nice. But anyway, so two different stores and. Lucked out.
Yeah, seriously. It's amazing.
Oh, and very like interesting dream, find
the second one especially. Go ahead.
I had my sights out for this for a long time. There is a 10-year MGP rye cask strength by Redemption.
Okay. Yeah.
And my buddy Rob had gotten one and he'd let me try some and it was good. So I'd had my eye out for a long time. And I've seen like a 9-year bourbon. I've seen like a 9-year high rye, but I hadn't seen that 10-year rye cask strength in like
Looking for that one too.
And Gilbert's got them right now and they're totally flying under the radar because they're on the shelf mixed in with all the other ryes and they're totally like nondescript. If you're not looking for it, you just gloss right over it.
What I'm also looking for is the old or not Rittenhouse.
Right.
Ooh, that
here,
looks
again,
good.
Right here. 10-year redemption with the little strap over the top and everything.
Oh, nice. What's the one I'm thinking of? Old. It's a Jim Beam product. It's a rye.
Overholt.
Old Overholt cash drink. Yeah.
That did not distribute to Arizona, but it was purchasable online for quite a while. If you didn't mind paying 10 to 20 over MSRP.
If it's still available, check it out.
I'll let you know if I see any around, but it reviewed decently well for what it is too. But I mean, total price on that is going to be somewhere around 120 or so. So you're definitely paying your $10 per year.
The old Overholt?
Old Overholt 10-year rye. I think MSRP was right.
I heard great
100.
Things though. Like I heard it was fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like Old Overholt. Even their Bonded is like a good rye.
I'm not sure I've ever had it before.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I had it at a wedding. Only time I've ever gotten drunk. Yep. Like we grabbed their Bonded and just kept it in a flask. And
nice.
That was the one story that I told Adam. I was like, yep, I got drunk that weekend. Like, finally. it was at a wedding. Yeah. And I was spending the night literally on site. So yeah.
Nice.
But not that that's anyway.
Right.
What are you entry wasn't on?
Yeah. So we are drinking Old Forester 1924. Mm-hmm. I am drinking this last little bit of a little blend that I did that is Old Forester 1915.
Nice.
It is half 1910 and half 1920. And it's okay. It's yeah. It does not have any depth or complexity. It just the on the nose, I get a little like not sugary at all, like dried bananas, dried.
It is a little dry. I'm drinking the 1920 myself right now.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. I think I mean, I like 1920 more than 1910, and I like it more than this little half and half blend. But but anyway, there's it's just kind of standard bourbon notes with not a lot of complexity.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Yeah, I got the 1920. It's good. I think it's good. It's good.
Yeah,
it's good. But I really am interested, and we'll talk about especially why I'm interested, if I'm able on the what we're drinking today to recognize anything about it, because we're going to get into it, but it's technically a different mash bill than the standard Old Forester. So I have a feeling I won't catch it right out. But then that's the thing is like, you think, is it all about the mash bill of why I'm getting these notes of old, you know, like I call Brown Foreman notes. But you look at like Buffalo Trace and like their rye and their bourbon, or they're like both their rye bourbons. And I would even go as far as saying their wheated recipe. They're all fruity sweet.
Yeah.
So they have a taste profile as a distillery, no matter what the mash bill is. So we'll see. It might have similar banana bready notes that I am used to with Old Forester. But have you sipped it yet?
Yes. Yeah, actually, look at this.
Oh, it must be decent.
There's I'm about two-thirds the way through it. I only have about a third left. Of course, you know, samples and all. And actually, like the day that I got this, soon after, we did an impromptu whiskey day at my house. And so I had it out for everyone to try so that everyone could try it before they opened theirs. So it kind of all went out the window real quick. Nice. You know, I'm not going to spoil anything. I was going to
spoil it.
Yeah, yeah.
Say this. I usually sip around on my shelf, but recently I opened a bottle of Eagle Rare. First time in a while, because I was, in a way, collecting some bottles for later. But once I hit my quota that I was looking to collect, I was like, let's just crack a few. And I am already on a third of that bottle after like a week and a half.
Nice.
And I only drink on the weekends, and I did share some. Like I made Heather and my father-in-law it was probably more like 2.5 weeks. But like it's already a third of a bottle. I'm like, dang, I must have.
Nice. You
know, cause I kind of just have enjoyed it a lot. So I've just gone through it quick.
I definitely have a tendency to like chunk my new bottles down like halfway like that. Like it was so scary with the George T. Stagg. Like it was half gone like that. And of course, like you got a sample and I did my own little reserve sample. So I've got it stashed away in the 2 years from now. I can try it again if I want to, but like, and those, and then me trying it and then trying it again the next day to see if I still feel the same way. Like suddenly it's half empty and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then the second half lasts for like the next year or so.
Yeah. That's how it goes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm always like a conserver when it comes, like, I just like, I'm scared to run out. Like I have like a half inch of my George T. Stagg from 2019, I think.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably not good at this point, but I'm like, but it's George T. and it's the last bottle I ever got of it.
Right.
I mean, that's 5 years ago, if you think about it, you know, so.
Did I send you I sent you a Thomas H. Handy sample, right?
You did.
Thomas H. Handy, actually. Yeah. Because that's a 2019 also. So same,
that's right.
Same family on those two.
Yeah. Brothers. All right. We're going long. Let's bring it in. Roll it in. And we'll go to break this week, which last week we went our first episode without an original break, I think.
Straight through. So excited.
Straight through. And we'll take a break. We'll be right back. And we will read about the history of a little bit of Old Forester stuff. So we'll be right back. We're back. We had a long break. It was a good walk. walk.
Oh yeah, walk. No. We don't call it walks anymore. That's right.
Yeah, we've forgotten that for a little bit, but I'm glad we brought it back. Yeah, we're drinking Old Forester 1924, a recent addition to their Whiskey Row series. This is definitely not our first episode on an Old Forester whiskey. We've actually done 7 episodes already, but we haven't done one in a while. In order of release of episodes, we've done Old Forester 1910, Old Forester 1870, Old Forester 86 proof, 2019 Old Forester birthday bourbon, Old Forester 100 proof, Old Forester rye, and Old Forester 1920. And I believe 1920 was like 211, I think, was the episode.
And you did say Old Forester rye. It a barrel strength that you did on as an episode?
No, we did the barrel strength as a, that's right. So we did a barrel strength for the, one of our first, reentry buzzes.
Yeah. 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 So you did the 100 proof rye as an episode.
Yes. Yeah?
Cool. Mm-hmm. Such a value king there. I love that.
It is. It really is. I mean, even I love Old Forester 86 proof for the price, especially. It's amazing. I prefer the 86 to the hundo for the bourbon.
Oh yeah. I've actually had neither of those.
You got to try it. It's value is like on point.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we've covered a lot of history of Old Forester as a brand, who George Garvin Brown was, about Brown-Forman, and even recently, at least the most recent episode, 86 episodes ago, we talked about yeast strains and the sour mash process that goes into Old Forester. That was specifically from the 1920 episode. But this being a very special whiskey for Old Forester, I want to talk about mash bills today and Brown-Forman mash bills. So we know that Old Forester is owned by Brown-Forman. Basically, the Brown in Brown-Forman comes from, it's like a family name. It's a Brown family. Goes back to George Garvin Brown, who apparently was the first to bottle his whiskey in standard branded bottles. But his product was Old Forester bourbon back in the day. In 1870 was when it was first bottled. Because before that, it was like you bring your jug to the barrel and you grab as much as you can, or you buy a barrel, you know, who knows?
Nice.
So anyway, Brown-Forman owns a few brands and distilleries, Old Forester, Jack Daniel's, Woodford Reserve, and definitely a good few, like Glendronach is owned by Brown-Forman, and Glen Lasso, other brands. But besides the, and there's one other like Cooper's Craft or something that Brown-Forman owns. Hmm. But the big three in the American whiskey realm is Woodford Reserve, Old Forester, and Jack Daniel's. I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I used to quiz Robbie on this. Do you know the mash bill for Old Forester?
Standard? 72, 18, 10.
Boom. Yeah. Robbie never remembered. You're like, suck it, Robbie. but I'm, it's hard to remember nerd. Those things. Yeah. That meaning, like, breaking it down, 72% corn, 18% rye, 10% malted barley. But we Multi know bees. What's that?
Multi bees.
Yeah, it's coming up. but we know that it's not only Brown-Forman, it's not the only Brown-Forman product that uses that exact same mash bill. Woodford Reserve also uses the same mash bill. But here's a fun fact that I learned today. Do you know what the difference between Woodford Reserve bourbon and Old Forester bourbon is distillate?
Oh, the distillate itself is different. I would have just guessed a different warehouse or different age in general, even though they don't disclose it.
Yeah. Check this out. I learned this today. I knew that Woodford distilled on site. But when I thought about it, I was like, okay, same parent company, same state, probably less than 2-hour drive from Woodford County to Louisville or Shively, Lively and Shively, in case you're wondering. But I did find out that not all Woodford Reserve is distilled at Woodford Reserve. Didn't know that until today. Some is apparently, but not all. In fact, based on some reliable rumors and some facts, I'd say most of Woodford Reserve is not distilled in Versailles, Kentucky, where Woodford Reserve is. And Woodford uses pot still for their distillate, but neither of Brown Forman Shiley Distillery or the Louisville Old Forester Distillery locations, they both use column stills. Hmm. They don't use pot stills. So that's the difference. Is wow. that basically and then one thing, yeah, so like Old Forester is supplying Woodford Reserve with barrels that were from their column still distillate, same mash bill and everything, but Woodford also makes barrels from their pot still distillate, and that's why, and they mix them together, and it sounds like most of it is Brown Forman, or rather is Old Forester juice, but some of it is pot still Woodford juice. And so that's why they taste different, because I was like, wait, if Old Forester is the exact same kind of thing and I can recognize Old Forester, why is it that I don't like Woodford as much as I like Old Forester? And it's probably because of the pots, the distillation. So
yeah. Does today. Yeah. Does Woodford ever do like a special release? Like this is pot still only juice.
Yes, 100%. And they do even like some of their special, I forget what they're called, but like they usually won't do single barrel releases. They'll maybe do like two barrel releases, especially for single barrel type things. But here's where it gets interesting. They do single barrels for their double oaked. And here's how they do it. They batch the distillate from them and Old Forester, throw it in a second barrel, and then that barrel is considered the single barrel. Isn't that funny?
Okay. Yeah.
So it's basically multi, it's not like a single, you know, distillery product, but it is a single barrel at that point, which is very interesting.
And even though it came from two different barrels and now it's in a new barrel, like all of that distillate does hit two barrels at some point through the process, whether it's blended or not. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. Where did I leave off? So they incorporate the pot stills. Anyway, my next thought was, if Old Forester and Woodford Reserve use the same mash bill, what about Jack Daniel's? And the answer is no. Jack Daniel's does not use the same mash bill, but Jack Daniel's does publish their mash bill. It's definitely more corn and more barley. Jack Daniel's is 80% corn, 12% malted barley, and 8% rye.
Okay. Nice.
And then at least for their Tennessee whiskey mash bill. Anyway, let's talk about what makes what we're drinking today special. Old Forester 1924. Do you have the bottle?
I do.
Oh, you do. You're just showing it. Yeah. Super interesting here because this seems like the first time, at least in recent times, that Old Forester has featured a new bourbon mash bill. It's not like crazy different or anything, but it is higher corn and lower rye, still 10% malted barley. So overall, it's 79% corn, 11% rye, and 10% malty B. And the reason they applied the new mash bill to this specific release, or at least what they said on their website or the press release, was, quote, during Prohibition, more than 200 distilleries in Kentucky alone were forced to close. Old Forester, however, continued operations because the federal government issued it one of six permits to bottle existing whiskey stocks as medicine. In 1924, Old Forester acquired barrels from closed distillers with different mash bills and bottled that liquid as Old Forester. So it's saying this wasn't our standard thing, but we're going to sell it as Old Forester. So do you think they sourced this?
Yeah, I don't know.
It'd be very interesting because it's a 10-year something. Ooh. And yeah.
Is there a way
I doubt they would
to blend Jack Daniel's with this and using a certain X of this and Y of that, the mash bill gets to be
math
this
real quick.
79. Can you do that fast enough? I'm not going to do that.
So it is between the corn ratio. You got that right.
Yeah.
And it is, wait, no.
Yeah.
Malty B on JD is higher than it was on this one.
Okay.
And they're both higher. Or wait, no.
Oh,
this might work out.
It's got to be the same proportionality.
It has to, but it's got to be between. Like if rye
24,
so JD rye is 8, and
This might be right.
Yeah. Doing this live?
No, here's the problem. Okay. Is that both Old Foresters are 10%. And Jack Daniels, oh, I'm sorry, 10% Malty B. But Malty B for JD is 12%. So you'd expect it to go higher than 10%.
Okay.
For that one. So, but that would have been very interesting.
I had my tinfoil hat ready to go here.
I know, right? Dude, that'd be crazy. They like just mix in a little bit of JD. Yeah,
exactly.
That'd be funny. Yeah.
Did they call it a grain bill?
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be funny. All right. So anyway, the reason, yeah, I went to that part of the Whiskey Row series from Old Forester. There is already 1870. I think it's called Original Batch. 1897 called Bottled and Bond. 1910 Old Fine Whiskey, I believe. 1920 Prohibition Style. And now we have 1924, which doesn't have like the sub label. Like this one, you know, says Prohibition Style. That one just says 10 years old. So I guess that's what that one is. And 10-year age statement, like I just mentioned, which is a big deal for Old Forester and even Brown Foreman, especially, you know, take it a few years back, like a 10-year Brown Foreman something would basically, the only thing you think of is like birthday bourbon.
Yeah,
maybe. And so, yes, some birthday bourbons do get above and to 10 years. But this isn't birthday bourbon, people. But this is an annual release. That's what I realized. This one is only once a year, similar to birthday bourbon in that way. My thought is this is probably easier to find than birthday bourbon. I might be wrong, but pretty rare.
It was at many Costco's here in Phoenix.
Really? Okay, cool. And they don't do that with birthday bourbon, that's for sure.
No. Birthday bourbon would be like, it would hit one Costco and they would
get
three or six, however many's in a case.
Yeah,
and that's it.
Gone. Have you ever had birthday bourbon?
I tried it at a bar for the first time not too long ago, actually.
Oh, cool. Which year? Last year?
Yeah, it had to have been 2023. Cool. But yeah, I just remember very light icing, vanilla icing kind of.
Yeah, oh, I think you told me that, yeah.
It was very cakey. Maybe the name just really sunk into me, but yeah, it was light and sweet, like frosting.
I literally gave half my bottle of 2015 away, and then I got bottles of 2016 and traded them. And then someone showed me a 2016 years later. I was like, why did I trade this? This is amazing. And it tasted like birthday cake. It was amazing.
Yeah.
So, proof is 100, distilled in Shively. So that also answers it. Well, technically, Brown Foreman, it's not called the Old Forester Distillery in Shively. It's called the BF, or like the Brown Foreman Distillery in Shively. So who knows? But apparently, now that I look at it, it was distilled in Shively. So lively and Shively. Total wine price $115, and let's get into it.
Cool.
Oops,
there we go. All right, I got a cork pop for you.
Do it.
Oh, squeaky. Ooh, squeaky,
nice and hollow and squeaky. Malty B, baby.
And naturally I poured way too much, so that's cool.
Ooh, this doesn't smell like.
Oh, and I had the old reentry buzz bottle right here ready to go, so I didn't have to pour out of my bottle.
Oh, nice.
But, you know, got to do the cork pop, I guess. So.
Yep. Gotta. No, do it for the vine.
This is sweet, sweet oaky. This says
different nose. Yeah. I was like, is this the same? Yeah.
Little more rye spice on the nose to me on this than my 1915 monstrosity.
Yeah, I'd say that too. Definitely. Yeah, it's not as banana-y as like banana bready as I get from typical Old Forester nose.
Mm-hmm.
Still good. It reminds me of MGP juice in a way. Leaning to not like your average, but like if I were to say, if you were to say, what distillery is this off the nose, I would say MGP.
If you were to say, what distillery is this right off the nose, I would say, I have no idea.
Yeah,
No, I mean, I wouldn't be proud of that, but I'd be like, it definitely doesn't smell like a Brown Foreman.
You know, what happens to me a lot is I'll smell something if I'm going at it blind and I'll be like, oh, this smells so familiar. I know I've had this before, but this, the nose at least, is unique enough that that if I were smelling this blind, I'd probably be like, no, I don't think I've ever had this before. It's unique in that way.
This is different. I need to pour a little more of this. I'm digging it so far. I don't know if it's like mind blowing, but it is different than your average Old Forester juice.
This is very polarizing too, from what I've heard. Some people are like, this is so not special at all. And then me, on the other hand, tip my cards a little bit. I actually do think this is pretty darn good. And the thing that really sets this apart for me is the finish.
Yeah, I agree.
One of the first things I did with this bottle when I got it is I blinded it against Jack 10, Jack 12. And like, I had some Old Forester junk Statesman. And sorry if you're listening, Old Forester.
But that was a gimmick, that bottle.
Yeah, maybe. It is for the movie, right?
I think so, yeah.
For the movie? Anyway, 1924 won overall. 1924 really beat Jack 12 for me, because Jack 12 was a lot hotter and spicier, and it was hard to see through all that spice. And again, this is comparatively. I'm not saying it's the hottest or spiciest thing I've ever had. But comparatively, it was difficult to see notes through all that spice, whereas the 1924 stayed really mellow, but overall had the best finish by a mile, in my opinion. Oh, cool. Very long, mellow finish with just like pleasant oak and light pepper and rye spice.
Are you getting any of the banana notes?
No.
I'm getting like a little bit.
Like in a candy way and like a dried way.
Dried bananas, probably. Yeah. Nice. Almost like a dried plantains kind of thing. Like it's like not even full banana. Cats.
Wow. Hope that wasn't too loud. I was trying to get my cat out of my way here, and he straight up knocked my mic into my glass.
Oh, it was loud, but
it didn't break. You said it was loud.
Yeah, but it was forgettable. Cool. I mean, it wasn't like people are going to be like, I can't stand this podcast anymore.
I'm pretty sure Bud just gave himself the loudest ding that's ever been given on the show before.
Baller. Hey,
what a jerk.
There is one thing about it. The finish is good. It's flavorful, but it's not potent to me. It's a little bit light on the finish, in potency as opposed to like flavor. It's got flavor. It's got a nice fade. It's almost like if you took Old Forester and said, all right, add a lot more like apple, but not like super sweet apple, but like apple. To the finish, this is what I would expect.
Yeah, for that, I could see that, because it thins it out a little. It thins it out a little with like a little watery fruitness there.
I'm gonna add some water, some of my limestone juice. This stuff is so old. I've had this bottle for a while, but I just use it just to take a little bit of limestone water out of every time. It's probably like bad water,
you know
it's very likely bad water.
While you've got the neat pour fresh in your mind, what would you do to this to make it different?
I'll tell you what I'd do to it.
Would you proof it up? Would you double oak it? Like, what would give it that extra
proof supplement? It up, I would think another 10 proof would probably make a big difference.
Yeah,
if it were like 110.
Yeah, because it does have a whole lot of flavor. It's just a little on the thin side. Yeah. Nose is pretty similar on the nose. I mean, nose is pretty similar on the water.
Very similar on the palate, too. I wouldn't call this caramely. I wouldn't even call this vanilla-y. It is lighter, fruitier. But I wouldn't call it like super fruity. It does have oak. That's good. But it's not overwhelming oak. It's not like oak for the sake of oak.
Yeah.
It's got some good oak to it.
The as close as I ever got to banana is totally gone now with water. And it is just, it's a, what little richness it had and viscosity it had is gone now with water. You can tell the age is still there. You can tell that it's not like a young product. You're not going to think like, man, this is bad. But there's just a lot of things that it's missing to make it be an exceptional product.
I'm going to take a sip real quick of my 1920.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I purposefully saved my 15 just to go back and forth here. A lot richer. Mine's a lot richer.
The 1915?
Yeah, and there's way more banana on the nose. Way more.
Yeah. I don't know which one I prefer. They're different, and I like them both. But the 1920 has a little more oomph to me.
So that oomph is a... It's... what's a word? It's like it's fake to me. It's like it's fake in getting you to like it. It's like it's like the Thomas H. Handy punch to make you think like dang, this is pretty incredible. But then when you try to actually search, well, what is that complexity? It's really not that complex. It's just that it has extremely high intensity and not a lot of other delicate things going on. So that, I think, what do I like more overall? I like the 1924 more overall, in because of the reasons why we liked, you know, like Saz 18 had such a special finish and had such delicacy, and there were so many interesting things going on.
Yeah,
I think there's more interesting things going on with the 1924, but it totally lacks a fun punch.
Yeah, I think you got a great point there. I still don't know which one I think I still prefer the 1920. But the nose on the ice pour of 1924, what is that? No, it's one of those notes where it's like, just give me the word and I'll tell you what it is. Blue cotton candy a little bit.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah, I dig that.
I did strongly prefer the nose of my 1915. The nose on the 1915, or presumably also the 1920, has a lot more sweet caramel banana that the 1924 just does not have at all.
Have you sipped it with ice ever?
I just put never, and I just put a cube in. No,
it's great.
Wow,
I mean, in a blue cotton candy kind of way, I'm digging it.
That's fun. I totally see the sweetness that you're talking about. I mean, I'm not gonna say I see blue cotton candy specifically, but like there is a dessert sugar candy sweetness here, because you can really get your nose in there now.
Yeah,
with the ice.
So this is gonna change my overall score, is the ice pour. I think this is the best pour.
Wow.
The delicateness to the, that you were talking about, like it's good to be delicate sometimes. The sugary, delicate finish here, and the, even just the palate and the nose are really good with just a little ice. So I'm gonna rate my rating on just the ice pour.
That's impressive. Can you remember the last time you
thought
ice pour was the best,
especially on a bourbon?
I know, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it is way sweeter. It takes away the kind of dry pepperiness, and there's a lot more fruity sweet notes on the palate now with ice.
Yeah. Still, yeah, like I said, it was like delicate throughout, but pleasant. All right. I'm going to rate this at a 9.0. But I'm going to look at my secondary score real quick. Probably an A.
Wow. So this hubbed your what? Say?
Yeah, it definitely did. If it weren't for the neat pour, it would have been an 8.7 or something like that. Or if it weren't for the ice pour. But yeah, I'm going to give this just an A. Not an A plus yet. Just an A. It's right between A and A plus.
A plus minus.
A plus minus. And yeah, I really I was kind of blown away by that ice pour, and I think it was very pleasant. And I am impressed by the change up from Old Forester, but that doesn't affect my score. But I will say that I think it was cool for them to do something like this, especially a 10-year.
Yeah. Were you purposefully looking for some mash bill differences here? Was there something in particular you were hoping to mash bill?
It wasn't that I was hoping. I just wanted to see how banana-y it was and how quickly I could catch if it were Old Forester juice. Because, yeah, I've done well on re-entry buzzes with Old Forester. So I'm like, can I recognize it? And the answer is no. This is not obviously Old Forester to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I am a bit below you. Mm-hmm. I do really like this, but to me, it sits around like the 8.6, 8.7 mark. And I will give this easily, I'll give this a B on my scale in that it is well above average and it clearly stands out.
Yeah, yeah.
It is not Hubbadoa territory quite for me. And I, who knows, maybe that's because I've had it many times. If I had held out like you do and not sipped it until the podcast, maybe I might be seeing it differently. I think that it totally has a place on my shelf. I'm proud to own it. I think it's really great. If I see another one, I'll get it. But if I suddenly hear that there's some 30 minutes away, I'm probably not going to drive 30 minutes for it. But like, if I see it again, I'll buy it again to be able to go through a whole nother bottle. That's how unique I think it is.
That's cool. Yeah. Oh, I like that. Now that it is, we've rated this whiskey right here. I think it's time for our next segment of the show that we like to call Whiskey World News.
Welcome back. This is the Whiskey World News segment, and I am going to read an article from Breaking Bourbon today.
Love Breaking Bourbon.
That article is titled Kentucky Bourbon Festival Announces Ticket on Sale Date.
Ooh.
Cole, have you heard of this Kentucky Bourbon Festival before?
Dude, I saw that Blondie was one of the headliners last year, and I would have been dude, that would have been crazy.
Nice. So this article is published by the entire team. My favorite joke, they each took turns writing one letter until the article was complete. And the article goes something like this. The Kentucky Bourbon Festival announced tickets for the 2024 festival will go on sale April 17, with early access for bourbon insiders on April 16. The festival will offer four levels of VIP packages this year, along with the weekend general admission tickets and Sunday only access. The 2024 Kentucky Bourbon Festival is September 13 through 15 in Bardstown, Kentucky.
Nice.
The bourbon capital of the world.
Nice.
The festival brings enthusiasts all over the globe, blah, 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 inspired by stuff and things. Last year, VIP packages proved very popular, selling out in under 5 minutes. So an additional tier is being added for 2024. All VIP packages include daily entry to the festival, a premium branded Glencairn glassware, and access to the enlarged VIP penthouse.
Enlarged
VIP penthouse sounds dirty, with catering and bar service throughout the festival. So the festival will offer a total of six ticket options this year, and I will tell you their prices. Are you ready for this?
Tell me.
$180 for the Bourbon Taster Weekend Pass. So all weekend.
Okay.
$105 for Sunday only, Sunday sampler. And then the VIP packages, $595 for the enthusiast level.
Oh.
$695 for the Flask Force VIP level, which includes a flask. Jacob Bromwell flask. Do you know who Jacob Bromwell is?
Oh, yes. They're so cool. They're like brass and they're handmade. Yeah, I've looked these up. Jacob Bromwell.
Okay. So it might be worth it for the flask alone then.
Yeah, they're like classy as crap. Yeah, they are. Dang. And they're like handmade from like brass or copper and stuff.
Okay. Well, add on $200 there, and for $8.95, you can get a 24-karat gold-plated Jacob Bromwell flask.
Ooh.
And then the highest level is $1,295 for the Decanter Club, where you get a branded Glencairn crystal decanter.
Yo.
So the top three VIP packages will also receive 2024 Festival Distillers Row single barrel selection being coordinated with Heaven Hill currently.
Nice.
Heaven Hill is the featured distillery of 2024.
That's cool.
And if you would like more information, you can go to kybourbonfestival.com.
So for the record, Blondie headlined Bourbon and Beyond in September last year. So not headlined, but was one of the top bands.
Interesting.
So I was wrong. It wasn't Kentucky Bourbon Festival. It was Bourbon and Beyond. But same time of year, apparently.
I don't know anything about these festivals. I wonder which one would be the one to go to. Have you looked into them at all?
Probably there and probably already bought his like super duper awesome crazy top tier. No, John Hughes probably. Yeah,
cool.
But then like you'll see like some of these influencers there, like I don't know, that dude Ryan or that one dude Ryan or like stuff like that.
We had a little interaction with him.
Yeah, we did
this week. Yeah,
yeah. Hey, that's the name of the podcast.
Yeah, that was perfect.
So it looks like the Kentucky Bourbon Festival is no like bands or anything. It seems like it's just bourbon and like that kind of stuff, which is cool, but I'd kind of prefer to also see Blondie when I was in, you know, if I'm visiting Kentucky for a festival. So I looked into it and there didn't seem like there was much to do besides bourbon, but maybe I'm wrong.
I didn't look into it much beyond what all the prices were. Yeah, but
that's all.
I'm sipping Old Forester 1920 now, and it's got this like thicker, like almost black licorice thing going on.
That just, like, it's kind of got a thickness to it.
Viscosity here and just like extra leather. I'll have trouble deciding which one I like more here against just 1920. This is good.
Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at KentuckyBourbonFestival.com, and they have like all the Kentucky distilleries there, like everything from Lux Row to Buffalo Trace to Woodford to Four Roses to Wilderness Trail.
Nice.
Wouldn't that be cool? Like just like hitting up all these brands and just being like, hey, Nulu, can we talk? And be like, yeah, because I'm sure they bring their like top marketing dudes there too. So that'd be
cool. I mean, I'm sure they do. It sounds like this is like one of the biggest events of the year. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, you've seen some big names here, at least for, you know, Kentucky stuff. Bardstown Bourbon Company, Heaven Hill, James B. Beam.
Ooh, I've heard of him.
Yeah, I know that guy.
So we're gonna do the Chill Filtered meetup at the Wisconsin Bourbon Festival.
Hey, there probably is one. There is one in Virginia. So yeah, there's gotta be one.
Cool. That's cool. Hey, Bart, all right. I'm probably gonna be work tripping over to the DC area.
Oh yeah, when?
In a couple weeks, maybe, actually. Nice. Come to think of it. So I'll let you know.
Yeah, hit me up. Do you know what part of DC?
We'll have our own festival.
I know, right? We'll meet up at A. Smith Bowman or something.
Yeah.
We might even be able to hit them up ahead of time because we've connected with their prior master distiller on the podcast before. So like maybe I could throw in a note and be like, hey, listen, you know, can we talk to the new guy?
Yeah, nice.
So let me know. Let me know when it's coming. Yeah. Sweet. All right. Let's go over last week's results. We had some good write-ins, but we also had some good voting and some good messages from last week's what whiskey would you choose. So
last week, we asked our Instagram followers, what whiskey would you choose to collab with? Oh, sorry. What distillery would you choose to collab with? Been between Cole's and my choices here. I said MGP for a high-proof, high-age rye. Cole said Del Bach for a Hypernova E heavy mesquite smoke.
Big, Cole, big mesquite.
Cole doubled up on me. He blew me out of the water. It's about 64-36% nice. In favor of Delbach Hypernova E.
Yeah. And Mark Viertaler reached out and he's like, people have the right idea going here. Yeah. So shout out to Whiskey Delbach Distillery.
I wondered when he said that if it was like, is there truth to this?
Yeah, I basically responded. I was like, you can just hide my name somewhere on the label. And he laughed at that. Yeah.
We got some good write-ins, though. So we heard from Marco in AZ. He said, MB Roland and Delbach Mesquite Smoked Dark Fired Bourbon.
That'd be crazy.
Yeah. Embellish Pod says BBC. I'm not sure what
Barstow Bourbon Company.
Oh, Barstow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Custom three things. One grain/plant. Oh, what is this? Sorghum beer?
Sorghum, which is a type of grain that you could use as a grain or as the cane has sugar in it. Or you can make beer with the grain. So you can make rum, beer, or whiskey with it.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Bro Ask a Testois wrote in, he said, Lot 40, give me an Armagnac or a cognac finish in a cask strength offering.
I'd get behind that, Bro Ask a Testois. Because I love Lot 40. Even their like third edition was pretty good. Hit me up, Bro Ask a Testois. Did they ever come out with a fourth edition cask strength? Because I haven't heard of anything since the third edition where it just kind of tanked a little bit. But yeah. Still good. But definitely not as good as their first and second edition.
Oh, okay.
Crazy.
Yeah. Paul Clarkson wrote in. He said, Buffalo Trace, E.H. Taylor single barrel finished in a maple cask.
Yeah.
So Paul wants that maple there. And Whiskey Drinking
Panda.
That
was Paul Clarkson, you said?
Yep, that was Paul Clarkson. Yeah, Whiskey cool. Drinking Panda here lastly says Leopold Brothers Three Chamber Bourbon.
Bourbon. I don't know much about that. Where is Joey T based? I want to say, I mean, if he's a Leopold brother, isn't Leopold Brothers like Colorado or something?
I don't know. I don't think there's many pandas in Colorado.
No, there's pandas eat bamboo anywhere. Leopold Brothers.
That
Denver,
Leopold Brothers.
Yeah, Denver.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he's out in Denver. Maybe that panda is chilling in the cold.
Yep.
Some
pandas like cold too.
Yeah. All right. You got a whiskey. Or what whiskey would you choose this week?
I forgot to mention in the intro that all the raffles are over. All the in Phoenix here for me. All my luck is out now. The Total Wine Lottery results came out.
Hurts.
and I'm a big loser. I didn't win anything from Total Wine this year. And I had a pretty decent amount of points too. I thought that I had a pretty decent chance, but and then turns out, you know, Brian Duncan even had quite a bit more than I did. He had about 33% more than I did, and he didn't even win anything either. I don't know anybody personally who won anything from Total Wine Raffle this year. So
screw those guys.
Yeah, I know, right? So the question this week is, what whiskey do you wish you could win the opportunity to buy? So not just win, you got to actually pay for it.
Yep.
And you got to actually drink it too. You want to drink it. You're not going to resell it.
You're not going to hold it on your shelf for years.
Exactly. You're actually going to drink it and you're actually going to pay for it. So, you know, if you want, and I want anything, we're going to get a lot of pappy write-ins. That's cool. Mm-hmm. I want to hear it all. I want to hear, you know, the people who would rather have something over, you have some BTAC instead of pappy or whatever. If you write in Double Eagle Very Rare, you're paying $2,000
and you're ready to drink it.
Yeah, quick. Right.
Not the whole thing, but you're ready to crack it.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, I will say the thing that I was really hoping to get this year, I thought this was going to be the year of the Pappy for me. I thought I was going to get, I didn't think I was going to get, don't get me wrong, I was hoping that I was going to get a Pappy 15 this year. And I was very happy and very willing to go ahead and open that sucker if I went ahead and got it. But that just did not.
You said 15?
15, yeah.
Yeah.
Not in the cards for me this year.
I was thinking about a few things. First I was like Eagle Rare 17 because that's just my favorite bottle. But then I was like, what if I had an Eagle Rare 17 or a Pappy 23, or even a Pappy 20. I love Pappy 20. It's been a while since I've had Pappy 23, but it's so prestigious, like getting a 23 year, like I would, that would in a way that'd be a show off bottle on my shelf and be like, here,
try some Pappy 23. And people would be like, you're going to share Pappy 23 with me? But that was it. So, but I think overall, though, like, would I rather have a Pappy 23 for $250 or $300? Or would I rather have an Eagle Rare 17 for about $120? And I think I'd still rather have the Eagle Rare 17. So that's my answer.
Nice. Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't even know what I'd prefer. You know, I've heard everybody likes Pappy 15. It seems like 50-50.
Yeah.
50-50 on Pappy 20 actually being nice and worth it.
Last time I had it, it was phenomenal. It beat out the 15. Yeah.
Nice.
But that was me.
And then 23, not a lot of people like the 23 because it's so oaky. So
I can attest that it's not as oaky as your average 23-year-old.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, it is oaky. It's more oaky than the others, but it is not overwhelming from my recollection. I remember thinking this is going to be over oaked, and I remember thinking this is not over oaked. It's oaky, nice. But it's not over oaked.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm still running a podcast episode or a main section tasting notes here on my 1920.
Bring it on. So
I put ice in this 1920 and it is syrupy sweet. I know I'm 100% sure I've put ice.
What you doing?
Yeah, I'm 100% sure I've put ice in 1920 before, but I've never like evaluated it like this before. It is like, it tastes like somebody took like a stevia packet and dumped a stevia packet in here. And it is like that level of sweet sugar to
love
me.
It.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty cool. All right. Next on Chill Filtered, we're going to go between next week. We're going to put a two pick Tuesday out. We are still interested in that Michter's 10-year rye, the one that is an H barrel, which is very special because one of the H barrels got whiskey wash. Or was it the whiskey wash or was it Breaking Bourbon?
Well, I'm not sure what whiskey wash did, but 100% sure Breaking Bourbon.
Yeah, so Breaking Bourbon gave this a 5 out of 5, which is very rare. They've only done like 3 or 4 5 out of 5s in their history. So it doesn't mean it's going to be that exact taste. It is a similar barrel, a similar place, could be different. It will be different, but who knows by how much, because it is a single barrel. But then we're also going to put that up against a Garrison Brothers. Yes, we've done a Garrison Brothers recently, but we're going to do the 2023 Cowboy, Garrison Brothers Cowboy edition. So, yeah, keep an eye out this Tuesday or so, and vote based on your heart. That's all
listen
we ask.
To your heart.
Yeah, exactly. So any other thoughts, Brian, before we close it out?
Oh, thoughts. I drank a little extra whiskey this go around, so there are no thoughts going on
that's
up here.
Okay.
But I hope that my leg is going to heal up all right. I hope the scars aren't too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope the numbness takes over once again and that you don't have to, you know, I'd rather have scars than have cancer. So
yeah, just a little bit. Yeah. Right.
And I hope our listeners have scars over cancer.
And I hope, yeah, this is getting real deep. I'm going to bring it back up. I hope our listeners can find a nice, sweet bottle of 1924 here. Cause, pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah. Find yourself a bottle. But most of all, listeners, I hope that our love of whiskey lifted your spirits.
I'm like, baby, I got headphones in.